Welcome to another edition of Keller City Limits, the podcast covering everything Keller, from politics, sports, and anything in between. Your host for the broadcast, Doug Miller.
You're too small to play ball, Coach Jackson used to scream. He said I'd never make the team, but I didn't give up on that dream.
Hello, everybody. This is Doug Miller, and welcome to Keller City Limits, episode number 5. In this episode, we had the opportunity to sit down and talk with Keller ISD school board member Jason Wiley. We talked about the upcoming bond and Jason's thoughts on the district in general. I hope you enjoyed the podcast and be sure to check back soon as we do have more shows lined up. And please, if you have an idea for a show or would like to participate in one, email me at doug@kellercitylimits.com. And don't forget to stop by KellerCityLimits.com for updates about Keller politics, events, and high school sports.
I want to start off by thanking you. We have Jason Wiley with Keller ISD board member. I want to start off with asking you a little bit of your history. I know you're a lawyer and a CPA.
I went to school at Arizona State and got some CPA experience right after school. Also went to law school at SMU, and then got my CPA license and my law license. Really haven't been much of a practicing CPA, almost exclusively in the legal field. Been doing it for Thompson Knight, commercial litigation, usually oil and gas. The last 6 years, I'd say that's exclusively pretty much oil and gas work. Decided to get on the board because I felt strongly. I've got a little girl, she's not there yet, but I'm kind of like, I don't like to complain and not do anything about it. I like to, if I think there's a problem, go in and try to fix it. So
try to fix it from the inside rather than complain about it from the outside.
Yeah, I hate folks that just complain, you know, and don't try to solve. And I shouldn't say hate. It's just, I don't like that.
It's a pet peeve.
Yeah, it's a pet peeve. So I like to go and be active, and that's kind of why I got involved and did this.
How long have you lived in the district?
7 years.
7 years.
7 years.
And are you originally from Dallas, Fort Worth?
No, I'm from all over. I was born in Newport Beach, California, but we've lived in Colorado, Arizona, Texas. I've probably spent more time in Texas than anywhere else, probably over half my life.
So. And when you came to SMU, is that what brought you back to Texas?
Or? Yeah, my family's out here. I went to high school in Wiley, Texas, out by Plano. So a lot of my growing up years were here in Texas.
And then we're sitting in your office in downtown Fort Worth,
I guess.
Right. I guess that when you moved to Keller ISD, you're kind of looking for something around this area. Is that?
Yeah, the firm I work for, we have offices all over, but we have a Dallas office and a Fort Worth office, and I've applied to do the Fort Worth office, so I've just lived in this area because I work downtown.
How's the traffic back and forth?
It's awful. Yeah, it takes 35 minutes to go 8 miles, no matter when I go, basically, so it's crazy.
Well, to get started on the questioning, that my first question, and it made the front page of the paper, it's been widely discussed, is why was it necessary this year to run a budget deficit?
Okay, the budget deficit. Well, it's the funding formula. You know, we're the boards before us really focused on not maxing out the tax rate that they could. And they were very good with that, and their other school districts in that same boat. One of the new funding formula, you get punished if you didn't max out your tax rate. So we're stuck with this baseline in 05 of where we had our tax rate. And so we won't get as much money as other schools do. And the way it works now, even if we raise taxes, we wouldn't get 100% of the dollar, because there's a offset. Once you raise your taxes, then you don't get as much from the state. And I think there's an adjustment period. Keep in mind, really, these formulas weren't out until we'd already done last year's budget, and we were well into last year. So this is kind of the year before when we did budget, we knew in advance, and it was easy to plan. This year was basically a new animal. And so we're in a situation where we're getting less money. We academically, and I believe within the district, we're seeing as much progress as we've ever seen. And we've got a problem that's come up. And so our choices are, we can cut salaries. We can not do any raises. We can cut back right now. or we can see what happens with the formula. There's a large, you know, I've personally gone and talked to Vicki Truitt and other folks, and there's a large movement towards changing this formula.
So basically the fix that Austin implemented didn't fix anything.
Well, yeah, it helped. Like, for example, Northwest and South Lake, the formula works well for them.
Because they were already topped out.
Yeah, and they also had recent huge bond. I mean, their bonds are much more than we typically do. So they're flush, and they're great, but they're the exception to the rule. You know, when I talked to Vicki Truitt, we went through this, and I think what was most persuasive to her on why there was a problem is our administrative operations numbers are well below anybody around us. They're well below what the state recommends.
The TEA guidelines.
Yeah,
TEA. Mark Youngs went over that with me and showed me that it was like 2% overall. I don't know the number.
Yeah,
I didn't do that research, but we are well with under that.
Yeah, and so the, you know, we're just, you know, the only place to cut is education. I mean, we don't have a lot of fat. We're not like the government where we have $200 bolts or anything like that, you know. So that was really the dilemma. And I initially went in there and I did not want to give raises. And the more I reflected on the progress we made and really getting signals that this issue would be fixed, my comment to James when I voted was, okay, I understand. I see a need to do this now, but we know where it's at now, and if it stays, the formula stays where it is, next year's got to change. And I think they know that. I think what we were told in that discussion was, look, we know there are certain things that we're stuck with because of how this came about when they finally released the formula that we can't work on. But there are things that next year, knowing this, that we can plan for. You know, you don't bring in as many new teachers for the growth. You start, there are discretionary programs we have to help special needs kids. And I don't mean special needs as a legal term, but just kids that are struggling, whether it's math or science. And you start
tutoring and
yeah,
stuff
you start,
after school.
You start
programs.
Getting rid of those programs to get to where we're not in a deficit budget. But it was to me, it just seemed a couple of things. Too drastic to start doing that right now. We get negative reviews from the state for having too much in our fund balance. So we had the money. We'd had so much success moving.
And the explanation of this fund balance is the money that's left over from budget years.
Yeah, that's
past.
Like savings. That's basically savings. And we're required. Well, we're recommended to have a certain amount. And once you get above that, they kind of look at it negatively. That well, you're not. That money should be going to education.
If you're collecting it in taxes, it needs to be going out.
That's
in
right.
Expenditures.
That's right. And previous boards were really good about building that up and wanting to have that as high as possible, so you have this safety net. And generally, I agree with that. We don't really pay too much attention to the state not liking that, but we had it, and this to me was an instance where you use it so you don't send the wrong message to the folks out there, the teachers that. Yeah, you just got us the highest rating as a district that a district this size in this area has really ever had, and we're not gonna give you raises, and we're gonna start cutting back programs. So it's really a temporary. It's a 1 year deal
right.
for me.
And when I met with Mark Young, to be fair, you know, because I wrote a pretty vicious letter to the editor when the new budget came out, and Mark Young's reached out to me, and I sat down and had a meeting with him, and Mr. Young's. Seems to me that he's a deficit hawk. He told me flat out that, Doug, this will be the only deficit that we run as long as he's in charge of finance. That even if they have to make draconian cuts, I think was his exact quote, that's what they will have to do next year.
Yeah, and I think that was the consensus at the end of the day, was everybody felt like, you know, we really don't want to do this, but there are so many reasons to do this year, see if it gets fixed, but we all know that next year, you know, we have to do a lot of things we don't want to do. Because nobody wants it to go to a rollback, which where we actually raise taxes. I mean, I don't think folks would be receptive to that. So we're just going to deal with the formula if that's what we have.
One of the hot-button issues about the school district is, do you feel that the district operates in an open and transparent manner?
I think, in fact, and I criticize James for getting too much community input. I mean, I feel like there are a lot of issues where we get community input and committees, and they have their input and their say, and I think some of their biases flow over into the decision-making process. So I think they're too much on that personally. I think there are some issues that just – that's why we hire administrators for. That's why we elect people to do that and get involved. But I think you've seen the last – at least since a new communications person's come in, a real increase in reaching out and getting information out there. It seems like every hot-button issue we have, we get – a large group of citizens together in a committee to get their input. We've made, like, the audit stuff. Any audits we have, there's always a public presentation. All our financial records are publicly available.
But as in general, like, when you get your packet, do you feel that you have to read between the lines on what they're trying to say, or do you think that the administration is giving the elected officials the exact information you need to have to vote on an issue?
We definitely get what we need. I mean, I don't think there's any reading between the lines, but there's the questions we have or information we don't have. There's never been an instance where we haven't had it upon request.
So they work hard on getting you any board members' information, any questions answered between the time you receive your packet and between the time of the meeting, or how does that work? Are they doing that at a work session?
Usually it's if we get something, we'll do it. And if you have a chance to look at everything before, which most of us do, you'll ask. And that information will be disseminated to the whole board. It's usually not just to one person. We kind of have the rule where if one person gets it, everybody gets it. If it's in at the board session, we have, well, we're not going to vote on this. We need more information, and we'll get that information. I think the food services was an example of that, where we wanted more information about what the difference would be financially between the two.
The two contractors that were bidding on the taking over the food service.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I mean, I think James spends too much of his time getting us information, but there are several board members that really are very aggressive at getting information. They'll get as much information as they can. I don't know if that was a problem in the past. I really don't, because I wasn't there, but I know it's not been a problem here recently.
When the bond came in front of the board, you were the one that made the motion to include the stadium in an overall package, in a single package, rather than breaking it down. You received a second, but then it was denied by the board.
Right.
Can you tell our listeners why your thinking was to include the stadium within the confines of on one vote instead of breaking it down?
Sure. And this is not, to me, a stadium issue. I don't have a strong feeling about the stadium one way or another, to be honest with you. My support for the stadium is really more based on economics, that one day I think it will be built. And if it would have been built in 2004, it would have cost us $7, $8 million less than it would cost us today. And my fear is that we wait another 5 years, it's going to cost us another $7 or $8 million to do something that eventually will be built. And that's where my support for the stadium and this bond comes from, not because a stadium or not. I mean, I don't think a stadium is as important as other educational issues. But my concern was on keeping it as one is everybody out there is going to have a bias on a certain issue, whether it's turf or performance venues or whatever it is. And I don't like the idea of letting people put their personal bias in play, because I don't think that personal bias really focuses on what's best for the kids in the district. And I don't think a lot of voters have the opportunity to go get information to study why is that needed, where does it impact the kids. You know, it's like, for example, performing arts. There's a performing arts box at Fossil Ridge. Some people might think, why are you doing that? Some people think, oh, we got to have that. But it boils down to that there's objective evidence that kids that get involved in things like that, they do better in school. And ultimately, that's the goal. So if it takes that for those kids at that school, which is probably our least highest performing high school, then yeah, that's something we need. And so I just felt like that we put a group of citizens together to look at it. the administration looked at it. We looked at it. We had all the information we needed. Some of that stuff's required by state, where they put something in place and we got to pay for it. Some of that stuff is major maintenance issues that some people think shouldn't be in there or should be in there. But at the end of the day, the question for me is, what is best for the district? And it's not about what, how do we set it up so we look politically good? How do we set it up so, you know, this group of 20 people feel like they got their say? That, to me, I'm not going to make a political decision. And I felt like when we start splitting that up, what we're saying is, well, we don't really, we're a little concerned that you might not like us if we do it this way. Instead of, to me, the goal is what is best for the kids. And I think that's why, and it would have been, so whether the stadium was there or not. Right. I thought one was the way to go.
So to sum up your opinion on that is you wanted to show leadership that you supported everything in the bond. You didn't want to break it up in saying, well, the board supports everything, but we want to break it out and show less support by breaking it out. Is that?
Well, yeah, that's part of it. I had a couple concerns. The message to me that we've sent is, one, it's one of two things. One, we don't think the stadium's as important. Or, and that we're not sure it should be passed, that there's some hesitation there. And two, that we politically aren't willing to, we want to put our personal political well-being in front of what's good for the district. To me, that's the message that sends. And it wouldn't matter if it was the computer part of it or whatever we split out, because to me, that's what that says, is that, you know, I don't want to, as an individual, and everything I'm talking about is my personal.
Sure.
It's not my
mm-hmm.
But what it says to me, if I would have voted for split up, is I would be saying, look, I'm going to take the easy way out. I'm going to take what I know this will make more people happy if I do it this way, even though I don't think it's the way we should do it, even though I think they all need to be there and this is the time to do this stuff. I'm going to take the easy way out, and I'm not going to take responsibility for putting that in there.
You ultimately voted for the motion that was eventually brought to break it out.
No.
Did
I was
you
the only one that voted
did
against
you
it.
Voted against that?
Yeah,
okay.
I was the only one that voted against
it. My apologies.
It. That's right. I think Kevin voted with me to keep one, but then he...
So you stood by your ground all the way to the end, yeah, and voted against it?
Yes.
In favor of the bond package as a whole, but you did not want it broken down into two parts.
Right. And it's a philosophy thing.
Sure.
It's not one thing in particular, it's just a philosophy. They could have split out technology, I would have voted the same way. I think some people disagree with me on this. I feel like as a representative, I was elected to make decisions like this on what should be in the bond.
Right.
And the voters get the decision of, do they want to spend the money for what's needed for the school district. To me, I
don't... And then ultimately, in 2 years or a year and a half, they get to decide whether or not you stay on because
right.
they elected you.
That's
right. That's representative government.
That's right. I don't think the voters' role in a bond election is to pick and choose. I think their role is to, you know, do they trust their leadership and do they think that they trust them to put what's needed for the district and do they want to give them the money to do that?
But the internal polling that the district had showed that if they included the bond in the overall package, that there was a good chance it would fail.
Well, yeah, I think it was a 50-50 proposition. I don't buy that. I mean, I think it was never presented. There was no polling based on what we're talking about, where you have everything that's needed, putting it together. I think, generally speaking, most people believe that we do our jobs and we do our homework and we do what we think's best for the district and on their behalf. And I think it would pass either way. But I do think when you split it out, you invite people to vote their bias. And then it's not, their vote isn't any longer about what's best for the district. It's about, do I like a football stadium? They don't think about, oh, well.
You're going to get in trouble for calling it a football stadium.
Yeah.
It is a lot more
well,
than just a football stadium.
You're exactly right. That's exactly right. And I'm bad about that. But it will be used for a lot more stuff than even I thought they would use something like that for. But they will use it for a lot of things. But at the end of the day, I think people will be voting their bias. They won't be voting, you know, this is eventually going to be a necessary evil and it's going to cost us more. They're not thinking about that. They're just thinking about, you know, this. In these economic times, this is, I think there'll be a lot of short-term voting.
the demographers are telling you that if this bond doesn't pass, what will happen?
Well, I think we'll have to a lot of things. I think, one, kids will obviously be put, we'll start using portables, so we'll be wasting money on renting portables that's really totally worthless. We'll never, you know, we're not investing that money in a structure, so that's just, to me, throwing money away. But more importantly, on some of this stuff that we're required to have by state, some of the security upgrades and stuff like that, it's coming out of, we'll have to start getting, you know, we get rid of programs for the formula. We can only do that so much. Eventually, it's going to be where we're changing student-teacher ratio, where we're laying off teachers. I mean, I don't want to...
Or not laying off teachers, possibly.
Not renewing.
Or not hiring as many as the growth.
Well, I think the stuff we're talking about, we'd get into where we're not renewing contracts.
Really?
But, you know, I don't want to be gloom and doom, because that's not a reason to vote for this. But there's a lot of money, a lot of things that... that don't happen if we don't have the money to do it. And it's kind of a perfect storm. You got the economy's bad. You got this formula really is hammering us based on being responsible in the past. And then you throw in some of these issues. And I'll tell you what, the one thing I've had when we meet with principals, I've had principals actually tell me, you know, don't give me a raise, give me technology. You know, our kids are falling behind because they don't have computers. And we got like one computer that the whole class gets to share.
But shouldn't previous boards, or maybe even you included in last year's budget, been putting those technology upgrades as far as PCs in the budget to where we're rolling those over every year?
Last year we put as much money as we could into technology. Before that, technology taking a back seat.
Okay, I have to admit, I forgot to check the batteries in my very expensive audio device. It's a good thing that I had to cough and broke up the conversation shortly after the device died. But what was missed was the question I had asked. In 06-07 budget year, there was a $5 million surplus. Should that surplus have been used to fund some of the technology items, especially the personal computers, that we are now having to finance? Now, back to the interview.
I wasn't on the board, but there is a clear point in time where we passed the point where you could do technology in some type of plan or budget. There is a plan, it just wasn't being funded. Well, now we're moving towards funding that plan. I mean, that's part of more a part of our budget. And I don't know what the dynamics were, I don't know what the discussions were. My assumption is that there was so much building and growth going on, there weren't dollars to do that. You know, in the new schools, they were getting technology. This is really more of a older school thing where there's issues.
But with PCs. PCs should be rolled over every so often.
Well, I mean, I don't want to either. There, we have PCs, but we don't have them available. For example, I think one class will have PCs or a few PCs and you'll share them. But there's not, you know, the newer schools have much more technology and access and learning.
So this is more of an equalization, trying to equal the older schools.
Yeah, the older schools really are suffering more.
And most of those older schools are in Keller proper.
Well, you know, I made the comment on the blog because, you know, I think it's important because I do kind of, I see the frustration with a lot of the Keller proper folks spending all this money to build schools where they're not. You know, their community kind of is built up with schools. Well, to me, this is kind of like the bond for where actually you're starting to see in your own around you and your kids and your neighbors are starting to see the benefit of it, because that's right. That's where there's a significant portion of this bond that goes to the benefit of the Keller proper folks for the first time in a long time.
And that brings to the next question. I went back. You made a comment on the blog the other day that had a link to the demographer's second quarter report, his PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah.
And I kind of went through that presentation, and what jumped out to me at that presentation was that every school in Keller proper, except for Keller High School, showed a decrease in projected enrollment for this year.
Right.
What's that say to you?
Well, I think that's because that's a more mature area, and you start to see that. I think that's pretty much the typical trend is you have a great increase in population and school kids, and that kind of drops off. as people's kids go through the system, and not all of them move, so you have less kids in the schools.
The age of the kids rises,
right,
and you have less in elementary schools and more in the upper grades.
Right.
But isn't that one of the arguments against continuing to build elementary schools on the west end of town?
Well, you can shuffle only so much. I mean, if you start busing kids from down in Fort Worth up to a school in Keller, the expense with that'll eat up. I mean, it's very expensive to do something like. Plus, then you have a kid 7-8 miles away going to school. I mean, it's almost there's a cost effect, and there's an expectation, just like everybody in Keller has, that your kid's going to go to the school in his community. And the cost difference over time, I don't think that's significant. So you may have a school that's more full now in Keller that gets less full, and maybe you could move 50 or 100 kids there in 5 years from 8 miles away. But you know, put yourself in their shoes. Are you gonna? Do you really think that's reasonable to make?
But maybe the solution is to have portables at certain areas for a certain period of time instead of building a school. Because in Keller, we're seeing the maturation of the kids.
But see, I don't think we're at that point yet.
You don't think?
No, I mean, because I think the schools we're building are massive areas. I mean, well, they're gonna put in thousands of houses. You know, we're not at a point where we're adding a school for a small group of kids, or a school that we don't think will be at capacity within a couple of years. I mean, we're adding schools that will be full almost immediately.
But we have Shady Grove, where my daughter goes, and Liberty on the far eastern edge of the district, that are woefully underutilized. I mean, Liberty especially. But then we're building elementary schools on the far west reaches of the district.
Okay, well, let me ask you this.
If we told my kid that
they have to go to the far west district, would you be okay with that?
No, but is there not a way to, I mean, we've had multiple realignments of schools. Is there not a way to continue that realignment to better utilize the schools that are on the eastern end of the district, to where that takes, I'm not saying taking somebody that lives out on 35 and busing them
right
to Liberty.
No, I see what you're saying.
But I'm saying possibly move those boundaries to where you can better utilize the ones on the eastern edge of the district to take some of that load off the western end.
Well, I think there is, and there may be boundary realignments in the future. Those are always hot button issues. I don't think anybody would have a problem going to the east. I don't personally know how full or not full those schools are, so I can't agree or disagree with you. I don't know of any school that what I would consider not close to capacity.
Liberty, I think, has 400 and some kids for a huge elementary school.
Okay.
I mean, they have empty classrooms, well, from my understanding. Yeah. And Shady Grove, I know Shady Grove, every classroom is used, but we have some classes with 13, 14, 15 kids in them. Now, that's great. My daughter's class has 14 kids in it. But
well,
is
now,
that,
Liberty's a new one, right?
Liberty's a new one
now,
in college.
I do know some of the newer ones have been built with the idea of full-day kindergarten in mind. And likely that's part of what's going on with, if you're seeing empty classrooms, there may be, they're there for full-day kindergarten, you know, because you can't. Under this bond, we would have a facility that would allow that to happen. And what it is schools that weren't built with that in mind will send personnel that have been there to the multi-use facility, so then they'll have classrooms for full-day kindergarten. So that might be what you're seeing. I don't know. I really don't know. But I know that some of the newer schools kind of have our standard program. They were building that with that in mind, as opposed to going on and adding on to those schools, which is much, much more expensive. You know, you build it with the idea of if you're going to do full-day kindergarten, which I think is
and
a long-term
you support
plan.
A full-day kindergarten.
Yeah, so on the newer schools, you'll see that. And Shady Grove's not newer, so I don't know what the deal is with that. But I do know Liberty's a newer school, and that might be what you're seeing.
Okay, during the downturn in the 80s, I lived in Lake Dallas ISD, up there north of Louisville Lake. And I lived right down the street from a brand-new elementary that they built. They built it right before the bust, and they actually had to mothball it for a few years because their projection rates never came about. and they mothballed it for 4 or 5 years with the possibility of a strong downturn of economy, especially in the western part of our district, where we've seen housing starts just drop off
right
to at least 50 at least below 50% of the levels where they were at the peak. Do you see a possibility that we're going to be paying and building new schools just to mothball them?
I would say, you know, anything's possible, but we have done, really, I feel like we've done everything we can to, through the demographer and having him involved so much, to get all the information we have to make those decisions. And now, one of the schools here, we decided not to put in this bond, and we're just buying land for it because eventually we think we'll need that school, but we're not building that school now because the numbers have dropped off to a point where we don't know. We can't sit here today and feel very confident it's going to be full in 2 years. But I think that the one that's in there, based on demography, even with the decrease in moving, even with extrapolating that to the future, because I think his future numbers assume that so that's going to continue, that's a school that will be full when we do it.
And that's the reason for buying the land now?
Well, buying the land now for the other school is we think it's going to be needed, but we're not as high level. We can't say for sure it'll be full in 2 years. But buying land now, land's going to be cheaper now than in 2 or 3 years. And we think eventually, absent something major changing, we're confident enough that we'll need land. Plus, we can sell it. You can always sell land for pretty much in this area what you buy it for anyway.
In doing some research for the interview, one of the members of the Citizens Bond Advisory Committee sent me an email with some points. He was stating that, you know, he served on a couple of these bond advisory committees, and he was saying that on the long-term side, none of the documentation given to the bond committee supports the need for the $55 million to build the middle intermediate school on the middle / intermediate school on the west side of 35.
Well, I would say that he's not listening to the demographer. I mean, we don't just pull that out of our, you know, we don't make that up. That's really coming from the demographer and where he's putting kids. And
because that is a major portion of the bond.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big school. That's the big school of the bond.
Yeah. And that's what that's coming from. I mean, we can all sit here. It kind of talks about when you talk about looking at your instruments and not how you feel. You know, we can all sit here and feel gloom and doom, concerned about the economy. It's all slowing down and nobody's going to move anymore, but that's really not what's going on. I mean, there are still people moving. There are still people.
How many new students do we have in the district this year?
I think we had a couple thousand.
It was like 1,100, I think.
Yeah, was it 1,100?
Okay. I think it was 1,100. But I think the projection.
Actually, I think it's gone up. I think it's still going up.
Is it still going up?
Yeah, when our last meeting, we talked about that it had gone up. So I think they're thinking that it's going to be in the 1,700 to 2,000 range. Which you think about that, that's a lot of kids.
Okay, you brought up the doom and gloom. Brings right into the next question that how hard is it going to be, do you feel? I mean, not the district's feelings, but Jason Wiley, personally.
Yeah.
With the doom and gloom, you turn on the news every night. You know, the stock market's losing 800 points one day and gaining 900 points the next. How much of an impact do you think that's going to have on whether or not this bond passes or fails?
I would be surprised if it didn't pass. I think it may not be as by big a percentage. I think it certainly has an impact. It's really hard to tell. I'd like to think that education is one of those necessities, and I think everybody in this district wants to maintain their property values, and I think this is something that has an impact on that. But on the stadium, I'd be surprised if it passed.
You don't think the stadium will pass?
No, just based, and I've said that in the meetings. I know
because they broke it out.
Well, yeah, I think because I think you get by the bias part. I mean, I think there are people that understand there's whether it's a need for one or there's an economic sense to doing it now versus later. But I think you throw the gloom and doom on, and you make it where it's just about the stadium. I think that's a hard vote. I mean, I'm not going to tell you how I'd vote, but I mean, it's a harder vote for me on that stadium now than it was 2 months ago.
Has the district done any internal polling?
No.
They haven't, so they don't have a feeling one way or another of how. I know that they did the phone in formulating the bond. They did some polling on to get to people's feel, but since the bond's been out. They haven't done any
politics. Not that I know of.
You've only been a board member for a year and a half.
Right.
One of the issues that I've always had with the school district is using a construction manager at risk instead of putting the projects out to bid. What's your feeling on that?
Well, since I do. I've actually done some construction legal work, and I think for a public entity, that's really the only way to go. And
the construction manager
to share that risk. You know, the taking risk on for a public entity like this is a dangerous proposition. You know, there can be major construction issues in several million dollars. There can be other issues that would make it our fault if we hire somebody, or you get in legal battles over it. But a construction manager at risk really eliminates some of that. You know, most of the lawsuits I see are where you don't have a construction manager at risk, and everybody's arguing about, well, who should have to pay for all these problems or these delays or these issues. And a construction manager at risk basically tops that out. And you pay more, but you also share in some of the benefit if there's cost savings. But if there's cost overruns, you know, you capped out on liability.
What's your general opinion of our superintendent?
You know, I've kind of got two levels. One, I think it's really, really hard to find a person that has a true passion for what they're doing and are competent. And I think anybody would say that James doesn't at least fit that minimum level, I think, is really jaded. I mean, I think it's hard not to reach that conclusion. You know, is he the best superintendent out there? You know, I think that's where people might disagree. I think James is doing a great job. I think it's you can look at it objectively, you can look at it financially. If you put aside the history that he had with that board and you look at just the financial position of the district, what it's done, and you look at the academic performance, I mean, it really kind of surprises me that there's folks out there that think that somehow he's not doing his job.
Is that your measure? What you use to measure the superintendent is, number one, is going to be how the kids are doing academically.
I think that's got to be. I think that's a main goal. Everybody wants their kids to have a good education.
And number two, is he succeeding in keeping cost structure down and being a good steward with the taxpayers?
That's right. I mean, I see goal number one for this school district is kids succeed. Goal number two is to make sure we're accountable for the money we have and we spend it appropriately. And I think if you look at those, it's hard not to say that he's been successful. When you look at the kids, we've moved up academically. I mean, the trends are significantly up, but just about every campus. I think every campus that they are. And then you look at financially, you know, the audits and the fund balance is so high. All those things we're seeing, not only good, but, I mean, exceptional feedback from anybody who looks at it, from any state agency, any group we bring in to kind of check ourselves. But it would be hard for me to imagine getting a superintendent that could do much better. I mean, the type of financial feedback we're getting is like A+. The academic moving to the recognized level for a district this size, I mean, just really hadn't been done in this area. So, I mean, it's hard to argue when you're seeing those type of results.
One of the big driving factors for the growth in both Mansfield, well, I guess all three, in Mansfield, Frisco, and Keller, have seen tremendous amount of growth in their school districts. Real estate agents over the years have promoted Keller ISD as a great school district to move their kids into. And people have relocated from other school districts just to come to Keller.
Right.
Do you feel with the district that maybe we've diluted some of that with all that growth?
Well, part of the reason I got on the board was because I felt like that was being diluted. I felt like there were decisions being made that were so, to me, short-sighted on the financial end, and there was no attention being paid to really, to me, what the number one goal is the education end. And so I felt like that was hurting the reputation, because reputation doesn't come because Keller ISD has a super mega fund balance. Reputation comes because your kids are doing good in school. And I think that there's been a real cutting of the change to allow a focus on what we're here for is improving education. And that system, they had put a curriculum audit in place that was eventually, I mean, that's really some of this that we're now seeing. So, I mean, I don't want to say that it was a total ignoring of education, because it wasn't, but I just think that there was such an emphasis on, you know, why are we spending $1,000 here, you know, on professional development instead of what's best for the kids? What do our teachers need? I mean, there are professional development needs that help kids. We're seeing.
We're turning the corner.
I really do. I mean, to have the academic performance we're having, it'll have to come. That's how it got where it was. You know, it was because schools were exemplary or recognized. That's how Keller ISD got to be a benefit to your property value.
We have three high schools. Mm-hmm. Indians, the Chargers, and the Panthers. Which one are you a fan of?
I like underdogs, and I kind of feel like Fossil gets the raw end from everybody. Because they're, you know, more economically challenged kids, and they're not in Keller proper. So, you know, I like to see them do well. But on the same end, Keller High School really carries the banner, and I think this district is, from an athletic standpoint, is judged by how they do. And so I really like to see them succeed, and that leaves Central, which I don't have. You know, I'm not a big fan. I'm not an opponent either. But you know, I'm always an underdog. Always an underdog fan, and I'm always. I think Keller carries the banner, and you know, Central. I always like to see him do well. But you know, if you're asking for preference, again, this is me individually. And I hate the name for the new high school. So I was the only one that voted against the Falcons.
You frequently post comments on the Keller City Limits website. What brought you to the site, and what keeps you going back to the site?
Well, I just kind of like being open with what's going on and what you're thinking. Because, you know, me, your individual part of that, really, that's the only outlet for it. Because as a board, you speak as a group, and decisions you make, that's just the way the entity works. But there are individual considerations. And I feel like one thing since getting elected, it's amazing to me. Probably the biggest surprise is how much misinformation's out there. How, you know, you're just wondering, how did anybody ever come to that conclusion? And so I think that's a way to attempt to try to get rid of some of that misinformation. But, you know, it's not always successful. I've noticed there's some folks out there that they heard something somewhere, and that's the way it is, and it doesn't matter whether the facts are there to support it or not.
You know, argue with a rock.
Yeah. And I, my wife would say I do that, but...
You're a lawyer.
Yeah, and I feel like I do that sometimes on the blog, but at the end of the day, that's really, I just might as well be transparent on what's going on and what I'm thinking, and if somebody's got misinformation, I'll show them why I think it's misinformation, and if it...
Well, for our readers, I'd like to thank you for coming to the blog, because Jim was a city councilman when he started, and he started the blog as a way of being open and transparent. Mitch Holmes, who's a city councilman, Keller, is a frequent commenter on the blog on Keller issues. And to have you come to the blog, you know, my information isn't always 100% correct. And I appreciate it that we have an elected official that'll come on there and put it on the record. This is how I feel, and this is why I feel this way. Because it does help in the discourse of whatever conversation it is, whether it's the bond, whether it's the TIF district when it comes to the city,
right,
or whatever it is. And it helps our readers see a different side of the issue that I don't think is covered in the local newspaper, that I don't think is covered on press releases that are put out by the district or by the city. Because you are our representative. And from Doug Miller, I really appreciate that you come and do that.
Well, thank you. And I hope to keep doing it. And they're always fun engagements of ideas. So,
and I also like to take this time to thank you for making some time in your busy day to sit down with our listeners and readers and spend the last hour with us and talking to us from the heart how you feel about the district. Sure. It's very apparent that you're passionate about what you do, and I hope that it comes across in the interview.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I would like to thank Jason for his time, and not only that, for his work behind the scenes that allowed us to get press credentials. That allowed us to cover Keller High School football games from the press box. The intro music for the podcast came courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network. The song is entitled Don't Listen and was written by David Kraut. You can hear more of David's music at his website, davidkraut.com. The outro music is a favorite of mine, A Country Boy Can Survive by Hank Williams Jr. I think it's relevant in today's economic times. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to see you on the website and back listening to our next podcast coming at you soon.
A country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those windmill boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. Me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.